It's Tuesday, November 23rd, and police say he brought a car from a knife fight. We start here. As new details emerge from a tragic Christmas crash,
the Waukesha Police Department is referring 5 counts of first-degree intentional homicide.
Authorities say this wasn't the first time the driver ran someone over this month. The jury's about to get the case in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery.
She made it clear you can't start a situation and then turn around and claim you're the victim.
What the jury's hearing and whether it's different from the country's other big self-defense case. And they counted the votes correctly, now they're getting death threats.
Mentioning my children by name, my address, pictures of my house.
Across the country, election workers are quitting, so who's going to take their place? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. There aren't many things more warm and cheerful than a holiday party. Warm drinks, caroling, all is calm, all is bright. Which is why what happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Sunday night, stopped so many of us cold in our tracks. The first thing to go through my mind was, have we just witnessed America's version of what happened in Berlin 5 years ago, when a terrorist inspired by ISIS plowed into a Christmas market?
I'm just going to recap and provide an update.
Well, yesterday, after many hours of confusion, police said this does not look like an act of terror, which might make people feel better outside of Waukesha. There's no overt threat to other communities. But within Waukesha, the dead are still dead. Lives are still shattered. And investigators say this was still no mere accident. Let's go straight to ABC's Alex Perez, who went to the scene minutes after this story broke. He's there in Wisconsin now. Alex, do we have a better sense this morning of what happened here?
Yeah, well, you know, Brad, it took some time for authorities to sort of come forward and explain to us what unfolded. You have to remember, it was complete chaos. They were not expecting or anticipating this. There were thousands of people gathered for this parade when suddenly everything, you know, went south.
Wow!
Last night, we experienced a senseless tragedy. Many of us were participants in the parade and witnessed these horrific actions.
Authorities have now told us they believe this suspect had gotten into some sort of altercation, possibly some sort of domestic disturbance involving a knife, and was trying to flee that incident.
And the suspect left that scene just prior to our arrival to that domestic disturbance.
Families watching the parade route in shock, parents clutching their children, people looking for loved ones.
I've talked to some of the people here, Brad, who witnessed what happened, and it's hard to describe the sort of fear and terror in their voices.
There were just like so many like bodies in the road, and then I saw them like start to pick them up, and they were like little kids.
We are all trying to process what we experience.
And so seeing this happen the way it did really has shaken people here. But authorities say the suspect, Daryl Brooks, who from Milwaukee, he's been charged now with 5 counts of intentional homicide, Brad, for the 5 people that were killed here.
And can you explain that, Alex? Because intentional means you meant to kill people. And yet this doesn't sound like what we've seen in you know, certain acts of terror, specifically where somebody runs into a crowd trying to cause as much damage as they can. So if this guy was running from something, why would this be intentional homicide?
Yeah, well, authorities have made it clear that this does not appear to be an accident. And I think we're seeing that intentional homicide charge, which is, you know, the highest charge they can file against this suspect, because even after it would have been clear to any reasonable person that they struck someone, this suspect continued to drive, continued to plow through crowds, through participants and onlookers, as the panic just continued to grow. And that's why we're seeing him charged now with 5 counts of intentional homicide.
I'll tell you this. We actually had a squad and barricades up, and he drove right through the barricades and the officers. When an officer tried to engage and stop the threat, he still continued through the crowd.
We've now also learned this might not be the first time this man has been accused of running over someone. Authorities say just on November 2nd, Daryl Brooks was accused of hitting the mother of his child and then, according to authorities, intentionally ran over her in a parking lot with what appears to be the same vehicle used in the parade incident.
What happens next then? What happens next for the investigation and what happens next for this community?
Well, this community, if you talk to any of the elected officials here, the police chief, the fire chief, they'll be the first to tell you that this is a resilient community. And one of the examples of that resilience, they described to me how a lot of average citizens were grabbing some of the people who were injured, who were mowed down on the ground, grabbing them, putting them into their own personal vehicles and rushing them to the hospital, Brad, just to make sure they got there and were able to get the treatment they needed.
So I opened my front door and just started pulling people inside. I said, just come inside.
I talked to a business owner, Dan Schneiderman. He owns a record shop here on Main Street, and his record shop became a refuge for about 60 people.
There were parents who were pushing their children underneath my record racks to keep them safe, and they would then guard those children with their bodies.
He also described just how traumatizing this is. He says he witnessed anywhere from 8 to 10 people just bounce off of that vehicle.
And you could hear thud, 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 thud as he drove through that. And you could hear it, which is a sound I'll never forget.
All right, Alex Perez there on the ground in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, just days after a monster verdict, another racially charged case heads to the jury. We head to Georgia after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've talked about the idiosyncrasies of a murder trial where the accused is claiming self-defense, as in, yes, I killed him, but I did it because I feared for my own life. That defense was successful for Kyle Rittenhouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He was acquitted on several charges in the shootings of 3 men.
Attorneys delivered closing arguments today in the trial of 3 men accused in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery.
But in Georgia, we're waiting to see whether 3 men will be acquitted in the death of one man. The Ahmaud Arbery case is about to go to the jury, and ABC's Derek Dennis is in Brunswick, Georgia, where this has all been unfolding. Derek, what are the final cases being made by each side here?
Well, it was interesting. Yesterday, the prosecution really just laid out the fact that Ahmaud Arbery was a victim.
But for their actions, but for their decisions, but for their choices, Ahmaud Arbery would be alive.
Victimized, she said, by 3 men, Travis and Gregory McMichael, as well as their neighbor, William Roddy Bryan, basically saying that these were vigilante attackers who just saw Ahmaud Arbery as a black man running through their neighborhood, even though he was jogging.
All 3 of these defendants made assumptions made assumptions about what was going on that day, and they made their decision to attack Ahmaud Arbery in their driveways because he was a black man running down the street.
She also said something that was really interesting, and she really drove this point home.
If you provoke somebody so that they defend themselves against you, and then you go, oh, look, he attacked me first.
She made it clear you can't start a situation and then turn around and claim you're the victim.
He's trapped between two cars with no weapon, no way for anyone to help him because there's nobody out there to help him. He's not threatening anybody.
So that was the prosecution's argument early in the day yesterday.
Well, and I've been curious about the defense, Derek, because here there are three defendants, right? Are there three versions of the defense? Because, like, they're all together, but they all kind of got different stories as to what they were doing.
Not three different versions. I mean, they're all claiming that they, you know, came up on Ahmaud Arbery, trying to stop him from running through the neighborhood, thought that he might have been committing a crime, and they all say the same thing, that they were there to try and stop him, maybe hold him for the police, conduct a citizen's arrest.
The police can be counted on to help, to respond, but they can't be everywhere, and they can't be everything. A good neighborhood is always policing itself.
What's different among the three is their roles. You had Travis McMichael as the person accused of actually pulling the trigger.
Travis says he gets 30 to 40 feet from him. He's afraid that he will be on him in a matter of seconds. He is afraid that he will beat him with his fist or whatever weapon he might have. And he's scared.
His father, Gregory, was driving the pickup truck that was riding alongside Ahmaud Arbery and tried to corner him at one point.
Not an aggravated assault, but the use of a reasonable and measured amount of force to make him stay where he did not want to stay.
And then the third defendant, William Roddy Bryan, is the one who shot that famous video, the viral video that we've seen all over of Ahmaud Arbery being shot and then collapsing in the street.
Roddy Bryan didn't shoot anyone. At the time of the shooting, he was some distance back. He was armed only with his cell phone.
His attorney said and argued before the jurors that if it were not for this viral video that was seen everywhere, we wouldn't know what happened. And they say that they produced this video to the police, to their neighbors, to try and prove that they were just trying to stop Ahmaud Arbery from running through the neighborhood and trying to get him to talk to them and then to ultimately hold him for the police.
You know, I can't help but think of the similarities, even in the arguments, the legal arguments, with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I mean, 1,000 miles away, but did the acquittal in that case, is that informing how people in Brunswick see this one?
In a way, yes. I mean, you have the backdrop of the Kyle Rittenhouse case and wrapping up just days ago, but they're vastly different cases, even though the self-defense claim has been brought up in each. First of all, you got far different communities. I mean, Brunswick, Georgia is just this small, sort of sleepy coastal community. It's not a big urban center. There's a lot of land and space in between people and homes and neighborhoods and communities.
Right. So not Kenosha also, in that it didn't have these like huge protests creating this chaotic atmosphere. It's not the same vibe.
Right, completely different vibes.
Just a terrible situation. I mean, I don't know.
You know, I talked to some neighbors in the neighborhood where this happened. One neighbor, Francis Moy, told me that the McMichaels were known to be sort of the neighborhood police, that they were very aggressive in talking and running down incidents that happened in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, he was very arrogant, you know, like he was the law and, you know, he kind of could pretty much do anything he wanted to.
I don't think we're going to see a lot of the big demonstrations we've seen in other parts of the country, and certainly not like we saw in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That said, there's been a small group of demonstrators here.
Back the way we want!
Justice!
Back the way we want!
Now!
The judge noted that he can kind of hear them through the windows of the courthouse, and so he decided late in the day yesterday to move the jury room
from an exterior room to one that's sort of in the middle of the courthouse so that they wouldn't be able to hear the chanting and somehow that play into their deliberations once they start.
All right, the jury probably gets the case today. However, that's not a given that they'll have a quick verdict. Just like we saw in Kyle Rittenhouse, a lot of things to go over here, particularly when you're talking about three different defendants. Derek Dennis in Brunswick, Georgia, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
There's already been an indictment for someone in President Trump's orbit refusing to share with Congress what they knew about January 6th.
That indictment against Steve Bannon, a federal grand jury indicted former President Trump's one-time advisor for contempt of Congress.
Last night, several more people were subpoenaed by Congress, including longtime Trump associate Roger Stone, conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, and Trump spokesman Taylor Budowich, who all helped plan the so-called Stop the Steal rally leading up to the assault on the Capitol.
We built the greatest political movement in the history of our country, and nobody even challenges that.
What's important to note here is none of these people have walked back their false claims that the election was stolen. Rioters are still pleading guilty, saying they were duped by liars like these, and yet Roger Stone and Alex Jones actually have their sights set higher than a rally here, a rally there. Now what you got are a slew of people vowing to defend election integrity, with a few going even further.
How surprising is it to you that we are having this conversation here a year after the results were officially declared?
It gives me chills.
Recently, ABC's Elizabeth Schulze dug into a disturbing phenomenon of local elections officials getting death threats. Elizabeth Schulze joins us now, and I know you just hosted yesterday. Welcome back. But this is really important reporting, so I wanted to get you right back here. What is going on with these election boards?
Well, Brad, there is a really big kind of transformation happening right now at the local and county level. These are people who sit at the polls, who really do the ins and outs of running elections, who many have been doing this for years.
For us, it's really never about who wins and who loses.
So what we're seeing, Brad, is this wave of resignations from election officials. Many of them are facing these threats, and they're just saying it's not worth it to me to keep doing this job.
What were some of the most alarming threats that you personally received?
Well, I mean, they got pretty specific. I mean, mentioning my children by name, my address, pictures of my house.
Now, we spoke with Al Schmidt. He is the city commissioner in Philadelphia. And in fact, he had a really important role in the 2020 presidential election.
It was the first time that the Philadelphia area has updated in about 8 hours, and it was the biggest swing that we have seen in this race in well over a 24-hour period.
If you'll remember, it was this batch of votes in Philadelphia that ended up being enough to call the state of Pennsylvania for Joe Biden, which ultimately won him the race.
And those remaining ballots will likely favor Joe Biden. That's because he's been winning about 77% of those mail-in ballots.
Voting by mail was new. It had just passed the end of 2019. So for our voters, it was the first time they experienced this sort of system of voting. And half of our voters voted by mail.
So Al Schmidt was in charge of overseeing the ballot count in Philadelphia. Now, when Al Schmidt came out and defended those results,
completely ridiculous allegations that have no basis in fact at all.
Former President Trump tweeted at Al Schmidt, basically saying that he was lying about the results.
Calling Schmidt a so-called Republican and rhino, or Republican in name only, and saying he's refusing to look at a mountain of corruption and dishonesty.
This was, of course, without evidence. And Al Schmidt came out and said, that's not true. We counted every vote. Every vote matters. We stand by the integrity of this process.
It was important to not be distracted by any of this, especially when there were efforts in court to try to slow down the vote count.
And by doing so, and by standing up publicly to the former president, Schmidt really became the target. And he started getting calls and threatening emails, a lot of them directed at him personally, a lot of them violent, and even going so far as to threaten his own family.
These were to my personal cell. They were to my wife's work email address, and clearly intended to try to disrupt what we were doing.
But so the results were affirmed, though. We know what the results were. And, you know, the person who won the most electoral votes ended up going into office, Joe Biden, right? So what I get that these people are stepping down, but surely there are people to take their place and the system keeps working, right or wrong?
Well, that's really what one of the big concerns is here, is that these election officials who are generally in these nonpartisan roles. Sure, they might identify as Republicans or Democrats, but poll workers or people counting ballots or overseeing the day-to-day of election administrations, those are not typically partisan jobs. These are jobs that people do because they say they really care about the democratic process.
And do we have any sense yet who is replacing those workers who are leaving?
So I think that's a big question.
We spoke with some election experts who've been tracking this, who say the concern is that the people who replace them are people who believe in the big lie about the election.
You know, we've seen, for instance, some candidates for Secretary of State, which is generally the chief election official in the state, who have come out and said that they believe that the election was stolen, and they are concerned about election officials that have not done their job.
Who do not stand by the integrity of the process, who are willing to question whether every vote should be counted, and that could be really damaging for the future of our democracy.
We were out there in Arizona watching the vote in Maricopa County and saw that go down in very mysterious and weird ways.
There have been evenings where we have literally spent the night at an Airbnb because of threats.
We spoke to an election official in Maricopa County. His name is Bill Gates, and he's actually saying he won't step down because he is concerned about the type of people who would want to take this role going forward.
All eyes are on Maricopa County, which has 92,000 ballots left to report.
He is hearing from people every day that the results in Maricopa County just weren't right. Even though he looks at those votes, the numbers are there. Audits have confirmed it. Recounts have confirmed it. Courts have confirmed it. And there really is no evidence at this point of any widespread fraud.
And let me be clear. This is not being driven by Arizonans. This is being driven by people outside of our state.
There is a argument that if you have people in these roles overseeing the count who do not necessarily believe in the virtue that every vote matters, which is truly kind of a principle of our democracy, that they say that they're there to instead push forward a political agenda, that is completely unprecedented in our history.
You know, I've certainly been involved in many close elections in the past, and there have always been people that are unhappy with the election results, but I've never seen anything like what we've seen since the 2020 election.
And that's some of what these election officials are warning about. The reality with the 2020 election is that at the end of the day, there was a vote number that we could turn to and say it was very clear that Joe Biden won and former President Trump lost.
Is there any evidence of widespread fraud in the 2020 election?
No, Elizabeth, there's not.
If we don't believe in those numbers, those hard facts behind it, who knows where we're going to go from there, Brad?
Yeah, you want to think that there's like a certain number of ballots out there. You just have to count the right ballots. If people start tossing them out in advance or people start sort of negating people from even showing up to the polls in their job organizing these elections, that's where it becomes actually difficult to understand who even did win a given election. Elizabeth Schulze in Washington. Great reporting. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, he was excited to meet Adele. Now he's rolling in deep. I'm not going to say it. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. What's the least prepared you've ever been for work? Like the one thing you duh absolutely need to do that you don't, what would it be like to get caught and called out in front of everyone? Well, recently, the singer Adele put out her new album. As part of the broadcast rights, each country who had paid for her special got exactly one interview with Adele.
Girl, you can write.
Oh, thank you.
You can write.
Thank you.
Here, it was CBS. Oprah had the interview.
What were you holding on to?
My friends always would say hold on when I would feel like how I'm, you know, the lyrics in the verse.
Well, a reporter from Australia was the one journalist in his country with the opportunity. He and a camera crew fly from one side of the world to the other. He sits down with Adele and starts asking her questions about all the stuff besides her latest record. Eventually, Adele seems perplexed and asks him, "What did you think of my album? You know, the reason you're here?" To which the reporter says, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
Look, Matt seems like a lovely bloke, but heaven help us, do your homework.
No one quite knows what happened next because Adele's label has refused to release these clips. The reporter says he was mortified that on a 20-hour flight, he hadn't spent the 1 hour to hear her work. He says he missed the email link.
You know, read interviews with her. It's basic journalism 101.
And while he says Adele wasn't rude, didn't set fire to the rain, didn't walk out, we do know how seriously she takes listening to this new album. Recently, she revealed her only demand in her latest contract with Spotify was that listeners be encouraged to listen to the songs in order. Spotify usually shuffles songs by default, but Adele says musicians' art tells a story and their story should be listened to as they intend it. But isn't it asking enough that people listen at all? If you had just said, go easy on me, all would have been forgiven right then and there. Hey, if you're new to the show, make sure you subscribe. Your phone will download a new episode every morning. We can hang out whenever you like. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.